The Sod Show. It'll grow on you. Join gardener Peter Donegan and not-so-green fingers Brian Green on Dublin City FM. Fridays, 3 p.m. The Sod Show. It'll grow on you. The Sod Show, Friday, 3 p.m, Dublin City FM.
103.2 Dublin City FM. This week on The Sod Show, we're going wild camping. And when I say we, I don't mean me, because I didn't go. Yes, I chickened out. But, trusted with a microphone, we sent Peter Donegan and crew from Gellert, who run Millets in Mary Street, up the Wicklow Mountains, wild camping, without a tent, a couple of weeks back, at near 0 degrees. Let's have a listen and see how they got on.
So, morning time. Where am I now? Lighter clicking in the background. So it's about 10 o'clock in the morning. We're coming up through, Wicklow Mountains, just past the turn off for, I suppose, Glendalough off the N11. I'm in the Jeep, I'm on the way, and in the Jeep with me is Aaron. Aaron, how are you?
I'm grand, I'm great. I'm really excited about today.
Explain to me just what happened this morning. We met at Millets Mary Street, I suppose, at about... 8 o'clock, 8:30 this morning. What happened from there?
What happened from there was you turned up with minimal kit, and some of the kit was really bad kit, and it was felt for the weather conditions that we're likely to encounter and for the trip and some of the activities that we're going to engage in that it just wasn't substantial enough. So we kitted you out.
It's fair to say, though, on a serious note, that there is a big difference between Peter trekking it during the daytime in North County Dublin, out, you might say, going through the ditches and the hedgerows, and what we're about to do, which is overnight it in what is and we're surrounded by it now. It's mountain and scrag and heather and gorse and all of those things. That's exactly what we're looking at. We're literally on the on the mountains.
Isn't it beautiful?
It's absolutely gorgeous. Can you tell me, or can you tell, I suppose, those at home, kit-wise, we spoke about it briefly on last week's show, but can you just explain kit-wise the difference between what I had and what you kitted me out with and why?
Yeah, definitely. Layering systems are the basis of all outdoor clothing, and it's crucial, and it's something that we'll go into in a lot more depth when we start the exercise today. Essentially, what people have to remember is it's a three-layer system, and while you came with some equipment, and this is a personal thing for a lot of
people... My ears are popping. Sorry.
No problem. Well, it's a personal thing, and people have their own opinions and things. There are some very basic rules to it, and some of the equipment that you turned up with might be okay if you were caught in a shower and you were likely to be able to get home within an hour or two, but the reality is, in the weather conditions that we're going to experience, and out here where you're a little bit more removed from civilization, although not greatly, if things were to go wrong, you really do need reasonable and good equipment levels, and so that's what we've done. We've fitted you out with some great kit, and we'll be able to compare and contrast all the different equipment that people have brought with them today, and be able to really dispel some myths, if you like, because there are a lot of myths that go around, and to also prove that you really don't have to spend ridiculous amounts of money to get out here and enjoy this beautiful scenery that we find ourselves in.
I have to say, there are two coaches in front of me. One of them has a yellow Reg. My ears are still popping. But the views, if you've ever, I don't know whether you've ever painted that picture as a child of a farm where it was just a series of V's and curvy lines, and one was, it was yellow. It was that kind of yellow, pale, greeny. I say pale as in, you know, pale farm. But what I'm looking at now is, if you were to paint a picture of a winter wonderland but make it a bit green, this literally is the view. And I can understand, my ears are popping so badly. Oh, but I can understand why there are 2, 3, 4 coaches behind me as I look in the rearview mirror. I can understand why there are 2 in front of me. I think that one is from Holland, by the looks of the dashes on the reg plate from here. It is absolutely stunning what is on our doorstep. What I do, however, realise, Brian, is that it is 5 minutes past 10. And in approximately 6 hours, I timed it on the way home yesterday, at 4 o'clock it was a bit dark. Bright, but somebody had turned the lights, the dimmer down a bit, if you understand me. And at 4:30, it was pitch black. Not a thing to be seen. So we are in a situation, I know now, where timing is of the essence. And the other thing I realised when I hit Gellert's store is, if we have forgotten something, well, so be the case. This is Radio Nowhere. Is there anybody alive out there? This is Radio
Nowhere. Is there anybody alive out there? It's 11:52 a.m. and Peter is with crew at the base, ready to take off on the trek, and he's talking with Adam Keegan from Millets in Mary Street.
So we're after coming to, I suppose, what I can only describe as a bit of a resting spot. Standing next to me is Adam. Adam also works in Millets on Mary Street. Adam, can you set the scene for those who are listening to this?
Well, at the moment we're standing in the lower car park in Glenloch. We're just about set off on our trek. Currently surrounded by a couple of nice little hills, some nice trees, decent view all around.
We're kind of in the middle of what seems to be a valley. Is that a fair description? It's a little bit of a touristy part of Glenloch. Is that apt?
It would be, yeah. We are towards the lower end of the valley. There's a lake just down to the east of us, or to the west of us even. But it would be a very touristy area. A lot of the paths around here are properly laid out with sleepers. They're nice and easy to walk, and easy trails all around.
So for those who have never been here before, you don't need to be a huge great outdoors enthusiast to be able to take a sampler of how beautiful this part of the world is and why tourists actually like to come here. You can hear the cars popping around, this kind of thing.
Yeah, no, completely. Glenloch would be by far one of the easiest easier walks around Wicklow. You don't really need a huge amount of navigational skills to be able to find your way around. And as I said, the walks are all quite easy. There's nothing too steep, nothing too challenging.
But if you want to take it to another level like we do, that's there for you to do so as well, I suppose.
To a degree. Again, it wouldn't be the most challenging, but for developing your navigational skills and just basic training, it is a great area to walk.
What's happened at this moment in time, I suppose, just to put people in the picture, the last time we spoke, myself and Aaron had left the store. We'd reached a base point, parked the car. We probably walked with our gear and everything we need to last us through the night till tomorrow morning on our backs, 5 of us in total. We hit base point here, and now what's the next step for us?
The next step is a bit of a walk, probably for about an hour, and then we're going to stop, do a bit of first aid, a little bit more training, possibly have a bit of lunch, see how we get on time.
Oh, I'm so glad I didn't go on this trip. Chicken that I am. They're about to set up base camp. It's 5 to 2 Saturday afternoon.
So let me set the scene for you. We've just been walking since we last spoke, which was at about 12 o'clock. So it's about 5 minutes to 2. We've been walking for about the last 2 hours. Came up really, really steep slopes. In fairness to the park here in Glenloch Park, if that's what you want to call it. The railway sleepers, most people will know, are usually extremely slippy. And what you've actually got is like a wire gauze, just trekked across it and tacked in. The tacks are left up out of the ground, and it's quite good for grip. What was quite frightening as another walker passes me. But what was quite frightening, you hear them laughing in the background, but what was quite frightening to get to the point, Peter, is that at more than one point there are ice sections going for stretches of about 3-4 metres. As the water then flows right beside it, you can hear it in the background. It's absolutely beautiful. If you've ever seen, this is a mini little water stream, but if you've ever seen, you know, those stereotypical gardens with rocks and a bridge, the waterfall, or the painting that you'd see, I know my mom has in her house, it's in McGillicuddy Reeks, I think it is, and it's that waterfall, it's that Irish waterfall. This is like one of these, but for leprechauns. And then you stand back, and it's like that top of the world, that kind of a thing. And this valley just runs on for like ages and ages. And we've seen some of the most glorious sights, some of the most beautiful photographs. You've got to come and check this out. Most of you, including yourself, Brian, probably wouldn't want to do this at the temperatures that we're at. And that's the other thing about it. Temperatures have kind of all of a sudden dropped. So we went from a point of walking where I was down to my base layer, t-shirt and short, in short, and I'm now back up to what I originally started out with, which is base layer, mid layer, jacket, gloves, hat and hood on over it. I've also got my boots on. I've got, you might say they're like spats. Do you remember them on shoes? They had them in the Bugsy Malone kind of films, and they kind of go over your shoes and then over your socks. Well, these are like them, but they keep the point between your legs, I suppose, the ends of your trousers and your boots, to stop the water from going from one point to the other, keep you entirely dry. Also, if you walk into quite a large marsh or puddle, they'll stop that water from trekking down into you. We're about an hour and a half away from what will be base camp for the night. We've just stopped for a quick, I suppose, bite-to-eat refreshment. And I think we were also looking to have a bit of a natter about hypothermia. So we're about the 2 o'clock mark and we've taken a bit of a seat. And I think as I noted in the previous audio, what's happened is that the most of us have gone from, I suppose, one layer of clothing to, I suppose, three, if not more than that, with gloves and scarves and hats and bits and bobs on. Temperatures have kind of dropped a fair bit, although spirits are quite good as well, which is hugely important. Adam is here with me, and one of the things that came up in conversation was hypothermia. For those who don't know, what is the, I suppose, the biblical definition of hypothermia?
Hypothermia is basically when your core temperature drops from 37 degrees to anything as low as 35 degrees. Anything lower than 35 degrees and you're in serious trouble.
What happens? What's the... Give me the nasty bits first, and I suppose then tell me what one would see. Let's say, you know, if I saw you having hypothermia, what would happen? But tell me the bad bits. What's the end result possible with hypothermia?
Basically passing out, your body shutting down, ended up, like, basically... After a long period of time, you start to feel very sleepy, very drowsy. You will eventually sit down, go asleep, and basically the cold will continue to set in, leading to frostbite or possibly death.
It's not actually the greatest idea to fall asleep in temperatures like this. I know we have to do it at some point tonight, but that'll be a conscious decision, I suppose, to do so. There's giggles in the background from the more experienced campers. Una, glad to have you along. I'm glad you answered that Twitter call. Is that Aaron in the background? Aaron has left us for a while, by the way, as we sit in this ruddy cold but we're comfortable inside kind of a setting. What does one notice, or how do you notice, if, like, let's say you go for the romantic stroll up the Wicklow Mountains, as you might say we have done, but you're not fully equipped, you're not fully prepared. How do you notice if hypothermia is setting into somebody?
Well, it is much easier to notice if it's setting into somebody other than yourself, unless you know the signs. But basically the things to look out for is if they're normally particularly quick, they may become particularly slow. Vice versa, it basically just changes in personality. Again, if they're really bubbly, they may become really withdrawn. If they're normally withdrawn, they may become really giggly. Just general changes in themselves. In yourself, though, it can be a little bit easier to notice. If you know what you're looking for. Basically, it starts with a numbing of the extremities, and then afterwards, sort of like a mental fog. It becomes very difficult to think, very difficult to focus. and almost pretty much very difficult to carry out any function whatsoever.
One will start to make silly mistakes, I think, was one of the notes of conversation we had along the way. And I think that's usually important, because as we passed the route up here, just to give people an idea, I think I mentioned in the last bit of audio, the trail is set out and done so extremely well, but there were points along where all of a sudden there was like meters upon meters of ice, and then there was just a little bit of a you might say a black spot in walking terms, but a serious piece of ice. And the other thing is that the edge of the cliff is quite attractive from a photography point of view, but not from a we were actually quite close to it. It isn't really the place I would want to get stuck with hypothermia.
No, not particularly. But one of the things you may have noticed when you're walking is that when you are doing something quite active, especially when you're carrying a pack, you do start to sweat a lot. Also, when you're walking, you're quite active. You're pumping a lot of blood around your body. You're using up a lot of sugar, a lot of your energy, and a lot of your water. Basically, then, this water is going onto your extremities. And when you stop, like we have now, for a break, factors like wind chill, which is basically the wind cooling the sweat on your body and also just cooling your outer extremities as a whole, will start to increase the factors of hypothermia and start to basically quicken the onset, which is why when you do stop like this, it is really important to layer up with gloves, jackets, and basically just make sure that even though you may not be quite, even though you may not be cold when you sit down, you're preparing to get cold, as you almost indefinitely will.
Excellent. I think you've explained it extremely well, and I'll, don't get me wrong, I think myself and Noon, I had a chat the day before yesterday, and I think that there was a point note in there where I was saying, yes, look, don't get me wrong, we're going up and we will have a good bit of crack, but I think there's a serious bit behind the scenes which I had spoke about with Aaron on air, which is we'll have the bit of crack once we have the serious factors in place, as in we have all of the gear we need to be able to sit comfortably in the cold. I think that old cliche of no such thing as bad weather, just the wrong clothing, comes to mind.
The Sod Show, Friday, 3 p.m, Dublin City FM.
Oh, to listen to them makes me feel cold. It's Brian Green back at the Sod Show studio, Dublin City FM 103.2. Another mince pie with cream and a nice cup of warm tea. Thank you very much. Just what the doctor ordered. And now the Sod Show song of the week. White Winter Hymnal from Fleet Foxes, from their self-titled debut from 2008. Let's go back outdoors and get cold.
So we've taken our little bit of a place to rest. Surprisingly, really surprisingly, as I look to my right, there's about five people taking this walk down to us. Now bear in mind, it's taken us about 2 hours to get to where we are. It also hits pitch black at between 4 and 4:30, as I noted yesterday. If they're going to get back in time without it getting dark, I would be extremely surprised. The fact that they're in runners is, there you go. One of the serious points of note that's being taken to my left is Adam, and this is, I suppose, the bit behind the preparation, the lengths we've gone to, even just to spend one night out here. What Aaron's actually doing is a crash course in first aid for sprains and breaks. And
the acronym to remember is PEEP, which is posture, so make them sit down. Basically, if they're standing up, they're going to be putting more pressure on the cardiovascular system if they do have a heavy bleed or a strong head injury, or they're hemorrhaging. Basically, it's going to put more pressure on, and they may eventually collapse. So sit them down, take the pressure off the heart. The next one is examination, so check them over properly, check their vital signs, make sure their pulse is okay. Circulation's always a good one as well. This goes back to hypothermia as well. One of the easy ways to check is to put pressure down.
And as you can gather, there's a joining of the dots. It's quite... Again, and I think I have to really double underline that one, the amount of preparation we've put into this for a five people trek is not to be underestimated. Don't get me wrong, I love my walks in the park and love enjoying myself, but I think double underline it, preparation is king on this one.
After that,
so we're just trekking back on to the first aid situation here for a minute. One second. Adam, we were doing the first aid demos there. You did one on the more common breaks, which would be a leg break or an arm break. The one thing you noted on the arm break was, if you're in a situation or a place like we are, and you do suffer a break, there's only so much you can do before it becomes illogic to carry the person out of the location. What is the set agenda? What does one do, I suppose, after you've done as much as you can to make the person feel comfortable? Bear in mind, let's say, case example, it's 2 o'clock in the morning, hypothetically, and you know you've got another 6 hours until somebody may pass you by, or you can actually get help to where you are.
Well, the one thing I'd have to say straight off is that if you don't have any first aid training, and if you do, if you know for a fact it's broken, you're better off not to do anything. Just dig in for the night, try and make yourself as comfortable as possible, try and get yourself to shelter. Obviously, if conditions do get to the stage where it's becoming dangerous for you to stay where you are, try to immobilise the break as much as you can, and then try and move them somewhere a bit more sheltered, somewhere where you can easily survive till the morning. Yeah. But the most important thing is to wait till morning. If you do try and move somebody who is either dead weight or just kind of slowing you down over difficult terrain, the odds are you're more likely to cause damage to yourself or damage to them.
Yeah, we just to give the folks at home a class example, we were doing it, we had a what's called a bivy bag or a survival bag, and there was a couple of scenarios on carrying the body, but the reality is that with one other girl and two guys, it would have been, we found it hard in parts, you know, walking the terrain. We found it very hard in parts navigating the terrain, just walking, so I can imagine carrying a flat body across that would be even more difficult. How does one get out of here in that scenario? Is it a helicopter job?
It depends on the terrain, the situation, and obviously the sort of the state that the person's in.
Yeah.
If it is a light break, if there is no signs of bleeding, then the odds are the mountain rescue will probably stretcher you out. They do come with their own ready-made stretchers, and there is enough in the team to move you.
Yeah.
However, if it is a bad enough break, yeah, it's a helicopter.
There is, again, a point in note, and I think Aaron made as well, as mountain rescue team, got to give kudos to them to do a really good job in extremely difficult circumstances.
They really do, yeah. They're a great bunch of guys. It's all completely voluntary, and they are really well trained. They know exactly what they're doing, and they're great people to have around in that sort of situation.
All right, guys, so we find ourselves at the top end of the valley at Glendalough, and we're at a location called... Van Diemen's, and Van Diemen's is a lead mine, and lead, as you can see from this little sample that I have in front of me, comes from a mineral called galena. And galena is widespread around the world. You find it absolutely everywhere. And it's quite this part of the countryside here, at least, is quite rich in it. Now, alongside this, you will always find traces of zinc. You'll always find traces of gold. You'll always find traces of silver, and in varying degrees and varying ratios. The beauty of this this particular mineral is that also in my pocket I have, which you girls will be familiar with, and maybe you boys on the Saturdays and Sundays when you wish to remain anonymous perhaps, is, somebody tell me what that is.
Eyeliner,
absolutely. Now, 3500 BC, back in the region around Egypt, the Egyptian pharaohs would mark their eyes with this. And this gets called kohl, gol, ghoul, and various other names. And it is actually partly made of this mineral, ground up and mixed with other vegetable matter. And it's supposed to ward off evil spirits in some cultures. It's used widely, actually. It's used in Asia. It's used in parts of Africa. And indeed, it's supposed to be... it's supposed to enhance beauty. And I think something that stood the test of time, 5,000 years later, you girls are still using it. It must work. So, what we're going to do now, girls and boys, is we are going to make our way down the valley, back down the way, or the direction at least that I came, and we're going to set up a bivvy. Now, the idea of the bivvy that we're going to set up, as you can tell, it's quite obvious to all of us now. You've been stood around for about 10 minutes, and already the wind chill factor has started to kick in. It's your body's sweating, things are starting to freeze on you, and the key to this now is to go and find some shelter. That's the very first thing that we have to do. Imagine, if you will, this is an easy route. One of the reasons why we use easy routes on exercises like this is because even on something as basic as this, it's very, very easy to fall foul to either hypothermia, dehydration, the cold, the weather, the elements, all of these things start to come into play. And it's at times like this, when the weather starts getting bad, we're starting to lose the last of our light, that things multiply when they go wrong, and they go wrong horrendously. So the first thing then is to find ourselves a little bit of shelter. Then we're going to look for some water. We're going to cook ourselves some food, and we're going to talk in a bit more detail about how we would survive the next 24 or 12 hours. Okay, everybody ready? Fantastic, let's go.
Part 2 of the Sod Show Wild Camp is airing on January 6th, 3 p.m, Dublin City FM.
We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
From myself and Peter and all the crew at Dublin City FM, have a wonderful Christmas and a very Happy New Year.